Thank you very much. When I was called to come down, the question was, what should we speak about? And the answer was, whatever you like, Safras. When you think about Safras, there's a lot of different aspects to Safras. Sofer Stam is, Stam stands for Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzot. But the one common denominator is these are mitzvahs, the raises that we're makayim each and every single day. This week's parasha, we have a pasuk that's a well-known pasuk. That the Torah tells us a person should never come to say koichi ve'oitzim yodi osali esachay lazeh. The Torah tells us that things will go well for you. Ve'amarta bilvavcha koichi ve'oitzim yodi, your power, what you're capable of doing. Sometimes it looks that we are the ones that put in the effort, and the outcome is because of our efforts. The Torah is telling us it's not the koichi ve'oitzim yodi, but it is the Rabbeinu Shel Olam who is the one who gives us that capability and the koyach to complete the task that we started out to do. In fact, when the Torah tells us that Hashem is the one who gives you la'asos choyel, it's interesting, but the Targum teaches in that pasuk of giving you koyach la'asos choyel, you would think gives you that physical strength to accomplish the work, to do the heavy labor. The Targum says, "Sidka yos Hashem alekoch arhu yoev lach eitzah lemikne nichsin." He's the one who gives you the advice. He's the one that gives you that thought, which properties to buy, which stock to buy. That's what he says, "Mikne nichsin." That's the fact that the Rabbanu Shel Olam helps each and every one of us. What this has to do with tefillin is an interesting Ben Ish Chai. On this pasuk, he says, person may say, why would he say that? He has two hands. A yad is the hand, the gematria of yad, yudal is 14. You have a second hand, 14 and 14 is 28. 28? 28 is koyach. So you would think, where does the koyach come from? The koyach of a person comes from the two hands that have the might and have the strength. So Zok the Ben Ishchayno, the Ben Ishlantari tells us that HaKadosh Baruch gives us that koyach to do chayil. So the person would have an opportunity to see a tefillin parasha. So a tefillin parasha, here we have a tefillin parasha. Just happened to have one in my pocket, right? And we have over here a Shulun Shel Yad. And we have a tefillin Shel Rosh. So we know the tefillin Shel Yad and the tefillin Shel Rosh are the same four parashas. Same four parashas in the Torah, Kaddish Liko, V'chor, V'hoye, Ki, V'yacho, Shema, and V'hoye, Mishamoya. The Shel Yad, they're written on one long piece of cloth. And in the Shel Rosh, the same four parashas are written on four individual pieces of cloth. But one many people are not aware of is a minute how to write those parashas. So if you have a look at a Shel Rosh, you'll see the Shel Rosh is written on four lines, whereas the Shel Yad is written on seven lines. So obviously, if you look inside a bias of a Shel Yad, the Shel Yad has an opening, tall opening. You're able to fit the full parasha inside. The Shel Rosh is made up of four small crevices on the inside, so it's harder to get them in. So we need shorter parashas to fit inside. But the Ben Ish Chai says an interesting remez. So if you look in the parasha Shel Yad, what do we see? The parasha Shel Yad is written on seven lines. How many parashas are there? Four. Four times seven is 28. Which hand do we put our tefillin on? We put our tefillin on our Yad Keah, the weaker hand. Right? Who is Chayzik Yad? Hashem is Chayzik Yad. The weaker hand symbol that we put on the tefillin on the weaker hand. Right-handed person puts it on the left-handed puts it on his right. So says the Ben Ish Chai, that tefillin teaches us and symbolizes the seven lines that we see in the Parsha Shel Yad. The four parashiyos times four is 28. What is the true koyach of a Yid? The true koyach of a yid is not the koyach of a oitzim yadi, but the mitzvahs that he does. And where do we put the mitzvah Shel Yad? Specifically on our Shel Yad, to symbolize, to show that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is our true koyach, and Eilev Erecha ve'Eilev Asusim, they go with their fighter planes, they go with their jets, their missiles, Katyusha rockets, v'anachnu b'shem Hashem Elokeinu nazkir. And this is the aside of Torah Tefillin Mezuzos, of what we are mekayim each and every day. First of all, Sefer Torah, we all know, has a very humble beginning. Humble beginning starts from a simple piece of animal hide. Animal hide, kosher animal. Now, what many people make the mistake, they know that it has to be of a kosher species, kosher animal, cow, goat, sheep, lamb, deer. However, there's a difference between kosher meat that we eat and kosher animal for klaf. When we're eating meat, we have to have shechita, melicha, nikur, all kinds of hachonis until we're able to take that cow and be able to eat that cow. Just because it happens to be of the kosher species doesn't allow us to eat it. We have to make all the preparations and the proper bedikas and the hashgachas to see that we're able to eat it. Klaf is afilu min neveilos utreifa shelahem. Even if it came from a neveila, cow got killed, whatever it may be. In fact, very often speaking in many communities out of town, the JCCs, there are all kinds of people, individuals, always have somebody from the animal rights movements in the audience, and they always have an uproar, you kill the cows to write the Torahs. So I thought it was just out of town. Recently I had somebody came in from the 92nd Street Y, they wanted to restore 3 Sifrei Torah. And he tells me, Rabbi, you have to restore these. You have to find a way to fix them. I said, these are gone. These are really deteriorated. I'm seeing he's so concerned. And I said, but why? You know, here it's not able to be fixed. No, the thought of killing all those cows to write new Torahs, no, we can't do that. We can't do that, right? So that was his concern. The concern was the killing of all the cows. But if anybody was aware, during the time of mad cow disease a couple of years back when they had that epidemic, there were articles, Wall Street Journal and other publications, where they said that the shortage of meat and leather, the ones that were complaining the most about the shortage of leather were Mercedes-Benz. They couldn't get enough leather for the seat covers and the steering wheel, so nobody made a tumult then. But anyway, we have our piece of animal hide. Take the simple piece of animal hide, you do a lot of things with this. Leather belt, leather shoes, leather gloves, baseball gloves. Or you can take the same piece of hide, L'shem Kedusha Sefer Torah, L'shem Kedusha Tefillin, L'shem Mezuzah, you turn it into a Halakha Sefer Torah. Now, a cow, the Holy Torah, right? We're not talking about holy cow, we're talking about Holy Torah. From cow, we get a Holy Torah. What happens? At what point does that piece of hide become a Halakha Sefer Torah? So we take it first, put it into the seed, into the lime. It's called the ibud. Soak it for a few days, a few weeks. After that process of soaking in the lime, what happens is, that's part of the ibud process, that the hair falls off. Sand it smoothly, we end up with a piece of cloth. Piece of cloth itself, we prepared it. L'shem, kedushas, sefer Torah, tefillin, mezuzahs, different machlekes, if you're allowed to do it, but tonight, all together, how we do it, that's not for tonight. But have a piece of cloth. At this point, it's a piece of cloth, yes. We wouldn't use it for drawing shachar, but it doesn't have the kedusha of a sefer Torah. So when does that sefer Torah become a sefer Torah? So the answer is when we write the words on it, right? The words of the sefer Torah are written on it. But who writes those words? So the answer always is a sefer. And what is a sefer? A sefer is an erlich yid. Because everybody here, if you had the opportunity of coming to a siyum sefer Torah, filling your noise, it wasn't necessarily, it had to be a sefer. But the most important part was a shoyim et Torah mitzvahs, a male over the age of bar mitzvah, l'shem kedusha sefer Torah, and he writes a sefer Torah. Because the fact is that what makes the sefer Torah halach? What gives it the kedusha? The kedusha of the sefer Torah comes from the yid who writes it. The yid who writes it, the Jew who writes it, has the kedusha within. Each and every one of us has an neshama lekayim yimal. Each and every one of us has that kedusha. And bepeh, when we say l'shem kedusha sefer Torah, we transfer the kedusha from within, and we transform this simple piece of animal hide, little bottle of ink and little feather pen, and we turn it into a halakha sefer Torah. So what makes the sefer Torah halakh? What makes it give it the kedusha? The Jew. So the Jew has to realize who we are. At times in the Beis Hamikdash, somebody kedush l'Hashem, a carbon, this is kedusha. Yemoel v'hegdish, just for the uttering of the words of the Jew, saying he's been making this and being makdish it for the sake of a sefer Torah, writing those words is what makes it into a sefer Torah. And you see, it's not just the Sefer Torah, but even Kedushas Hashem. Think about it. There was an interesting Shaila. Okay, it came to Bekiva Eger. The Tosik in the Torah that said, Vayomer Yaakov El Yosef Kael Shakai. Familiar Pasik, right? We all know the Pasik. Vayomer Yaakov El Yosef Kael Shakai Nira Elai Beluz. And what was the Pasik when they were reading it? The Torah was reading it. Vayomer Yaakov Kael Shakai. And they corrected him. Skipped El Yosef. He went back. Vayomer Yaakov Kael Shakai. El Yosef was missing. So they came to Bekiva Eger. Why do they have to go to Bekiva Eger? He asked the Shaila. Because, what were the words? Let's think about this. Vayomer Yaakov El Yosef. How do you spell El? Aleph Lamed. Kael Shakai. Kael, how do you spell Kael? The word of Chayil. The difference between Kael, if you were Makadish this Shem, Aleph Lamed, this became Shem Hashem, is an Issa deraisa of Mechikas Hashem. You cannot erase God's name. So now the question was, did the Sofer write Vayoyme Yaakov El? Phone rang, he got up, okay, came back, El, Shakai, he wrote Hashem's name. So the first El was Echoel. Or did he write Vayoyme Yaakov El Yosef? Then he went up to get a coffee, and he came back, and he sat down, and he skipped Kael Shakai. So the Shaila came to Kiva Ego, what do we do? Because now it said Vayoyme Yaakov Kael Shakai. So is the Kael Hashem Hashem and the Shakai, Kael Shakai is correct? So how would the Oifan HaTikun be? We would erase Vayoyme Yaakov the other way, and we would fill in some extra space on the right, my right, as I'm reading the Sefer Torah, to the right of the Kael Shakai, and leave it. But on the other hand, if this was El, it's not Hashem. It's a Apostle of Sefer Torah. So Rekiv Eger Paskin was interesting, but he Paskin, he says, the way a person's thought process works, he says, a Sefer writes, he does Vayoyme Yaakov, he touches it. As he writes it, he touches it. He's not just writing word by word. So if he wrote, if you see it says Kael Shakai, you could assume that he sat down, he didn't write Kael alone and walk away from Shakai. It goes together. It goes together with it is. But the point they're trying to bring out here is to understand the Kedushas Hashem, what a Jew is capable of accomplishing, just with a Amir B'peh. L'shem Kedushas Sefer Torah, L'shem Kedushas Hashem, he transformed two simple letters into Hashem Hashem. Another Shaila was, Vayoyme Elekim El Hanochash. And it said, Vayoyme El Hanochash. So again, the same question. Did he write Vayoyme, he skipped Elekim and he wrote El Hanochash? Or do you write Vayoymer and Aleph Lamed of Elikim, which is a nitpal of the Shem, a part of the Shem, which has a kedusha of the Shem, and then he got up, for whatever reason, came back, and he saw the Aleph Lamed continued, skipped the rest of the Shem, and wrote Yosef. And he got a similar situation, because the person wouldn't stop in the middle of the Shem. But this is just one point that I feel it's important to understand. We look at a Sefer Torah. Think of a Sefer Torah. I mean, it sounds funny. But a year and a half before it's written, a year and a half before a Sefer Torah is written, it's a herd of cows in the pasture. Rabbi Yisai, you wouldn't walk near a herd of cows. I mean, we're in the mountains now. We had chicken farms next to us for 30 years. All of a sudden, the next door, we decided to go into cattle. When the wind blows, you can't stay there. I mean, it's insane, right? It's not a pleasant experience. But yet you take a cow. How do you say cow in Yiddish? A grob of a hema, right? You take it, and you transform that cow into a heiliger Sefer Torah. So Nusa Haska, we learn, is if you see a person could take a cow with the right kavana and transform that into a holy Sefer Torah, what could we do with ourselves? We have more intellect. We could turn ourselves into walking, talking, living Sefer Torah. But this is just a point. It's important to understand of who we are and what we're capable of doing, the Kiddush that we bring to this world. When a person sits and learns Torah, we say we're holding up the world. We are holding up the world, whether we realize it or not. Our little pasuk or our little seder that we're doing, that's something which really has an effect. Yes, it does, because we can't even begin to imagine how much is involved in the Limud HaTorah. But we talk about a Sefer Torah. We write the Oysas of Sefer Torah. Sofer has to copy each and every ois b'ksav. He cannot write a bal peh. Sofer is a Talmud Chacham. So the halacha by mezuzah, by tefillin, if he knows a bal peh, since he's writing a mezuzah and he's writing it over and over again, he's ragel b'shma, he's allowed to write it by heart. But if he's writing a Sefer Torah, he has to write it mitoch haksav. He has to have another text in front of him, copy it, say the words. He has to mouth the words. It's not just looking at it and saying it, because this hevel piv, saying the words, is shailus and halacha if that was lishma, if he didn't say the words. Because that hevel piv is what transfers the kedusha to those words. But it's so important that every letter has to be exact. Every letter has to be precise. You know, somebody once said to me, Rabbi, you know, mezuzah, it's possible. One letter, little vav, little too short, looked like a yud. She says, so the din in mezuzah and tefillin is a halacha of kisidron, which means that it has to be written consecutively. But if you start the mezuzah from Shema Yisrael, every letter has to be written in order. You cannot write out of context and go back. Therefore, if you found a mistake after the mezuzah was completed, you cannot correct it, because now it's not kisidron. So that's the halacha of mezuzah and tefillin. Sefer Torah, however, the halacha is that it's lamailim and azman. Sefer Torah does not have to be written kisidron. So if you found a mistake in the Sefer Torah, the next week you come back, you see it's being used again, it was able to be fixed to be able to put together.
So what happens when people give mezuzahs to be checked?
People give mezuzahs to be checked. So the question that people always ask from out of town, you know, unfortunately they are very inexpensive and they buy the least expensive mezuzahs, and some of them to begin with or not, is when we check mezuzahs, how come every time we check mezuzahs, they're no good and we have to replace them? And the answer is, you don't always have to replace them. When you're checking mezuzahs, they're good quality mezuzahs to check to begin with. So the idea of checking a mezuzah is to make sure that every letter is intact when it was written to begin with. So what happens? The sofer writes it. After he writes it, and there's a halacha that every time he writes Hashem Hashem, he writes Hashem's name because of the fact that now he cannot go back to erase. So if he did not write Hashem's name, and he reviews the mezuzah, and he sees he made a mistake, then he can erase all the letters back to the mistake. How much like Kesidah? So the Sefer wrote the mezuzah. If he's doing it properly, he's reviewing it each time before he writes Hashem's name. So he's proofreading. He's basically Magia the mezuzah. He wrote the mezuzah, he won. Then we give it to a Baal Magia who reads it again to go through it. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have a computer. The computer reads the mezuzah, scans it, and hopefully pulls out the way. So if a person had a mezuzah, quality mezuzah, Mahudar, initially he spent money on a good quality mezuzah, it was kosher, so truthfully after a couple of years there should not be any problem with his mezuzah. Why does he inspect it? Because he wants to make sure to see that everything is intact. Unfortunately, the heat can dry out the mezuzah, so in the summertime we've had instances in the mountains now where people opened up the mezuzah cases for checking and there was nothing inside. And you look inside and you see the dust blow out. The cloth is a piece of leather, thin piece of leather, and it's baking in the sun, and they put a waterproof metal case on the outside, so now it intensifies the heat. Imagine you open up your trunk, you sit in the car, that heat is more than the heat on the outside, so the mezuzah literally gets cooked and disintegrates. Inside, powder just comes out, there's no mezuzah, it's gone. I personally had a mezuzah on my garage door where it was a waterproof case, and I put it into a plastic bag on top of that. Everything is intact. The letters didn't dry out. The letters are still perfect. They're not broken. And then again, you know, we always check a mezuzah in Haggah. One of the first things we learn is guilty until proven innocent. Because when you look at a mezuzah and always assume, the person who wrote it was an Erlich Yid, and he knew what he was doing, and somebody else did it. So you're looking at it, okay, it's fine. You don't really look for any mistakes because you don't believe you're going to find it. But if you approach a mezuzah looking for the mistakes, so if they're there, it's guilty until proven innocent, you didn't find anything, it's perfect. So that's what we check a mezuzah for, just to see that everything is intact. You know, in fact, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, first halacha, Hilchas Mezuzah, you know, very often you find Shulchan Aruch tells us the facts, tells us the halachas. You know, very rarely you find the Shulchan Aruch giving us Musa. And in the first halach of Hilchas Mezuzah in the Tur, he says a person should check his mezuzahs, because in the mezuzah, what does it say in the mezuzah? First, but at the end of Parshas V'Hayim Shemai, it says, "Ukshartam, Upsavtam, and Laman Yirbu Yemeichem." So Zok the Tur, that from here you see that a person who has kosher mezuzahs, Pepischai, is a person he has a special bracha of Laman Yirbu Yemeichem. Then he says something interesting. Umichlal Hein, from the positive, you can infer the negative. That if somebody did not have the positive mezuzah, kosher mezuzahs, so he doesn't have the shmir of what it's all about. So somebody once came, many years ago, went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe in Crown Heights at the time, and the Rebbe was known fact. Everybody thinks that checking mezuzahs was Lubavitcher. Always Lubavitcher, the Rebbe always told check the mezuzahs. I'll tell you the fact that Reb Chaim Kanievsky tells people to check their mezuzahs. I mean, I've gotten calls from people who are still in Eretz Yisrael, and he told them, send your brothers to your house now to take down the mezuzahs, to check it. The Rebbetzins of Chayim Lisa sent people to check their mezuzahs. This is something that's a shulchan, that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. But this ma'aseh was in Crown Heights, and the soifim on Kingston Avenue knew, when they used to get from the Gaba, I used to say on the petek, when they handed in the mezuzahs, check them, al pip kudos ha'ad mashlita. The Rebbe kehesen, the Rebbe said we should check the mezuzahs. So the soifim right away, when they saw this, they started checking very carefully. The Rebbe must see something, waiting to hear the story, what the problem was and what it is. Checked the mezuzahs. Checked it, didn't find the thing. So he checked it again, 3 times, he gave it to his friend. What? How could it be? The Rebbe said check the mezuzahs, nothing wrong. Finally, they all checked it, there's nothing wrong. Went back to the Gabbai and says, Chashtenish, what's the Rebbe gemeint? What happened? What did he do? See, he says, Shaita, what's the Rebbe? The fact that it says, Ukshartam, Uksavtam, Laman Yivu Yimechem, that it says a person who has a mezuzah, kosher mezuzah, and a kosher tefillin, he has that special schus of Laman Yivu Yimechem, just the schus alone that the person is concerned about his mezuzahs, to ensure, to check them again, to make sure that they're perfect, that the mitzvah is being done properly, the person has tzaras, this should be his schus, that he's concerned about, he should have the extra Laman Yivu Yimechem. So you see, people very often, I've been told very often, oh, your mom is Neiva, you hung up at Settle and advertising. We checked mezuzahs many years ago. I remember before I had this store, I used to be live in the house upstairs. I hung up in the Landau Shul, you know, Laminyonim, so I had a little Settle there, checked mezuzahs. So I got a guy comes over, you're Oivalus Neiva, you don't have to check your mezuzahs. I said, excuse me, didn't say you have to check it. If anybody wants to, they can, number one. The next day I brought him back photocopies of all the people who didn't have to check their mezuzahs, but are very happy they did. Pen Yiftel Livham Techo. Okay, or built the Chabad. There are all kinds of stories. You know, you want to know about things, of stories. I could tell you some stories. I had a younger man that was learning in the mirror at the time. Married 5 years. His wife just had her third miscarriage. And he brought in the mezuzahs, tefillin to check. And I checked the mezuzahs. It was with mishpachas. I knew a little bit that, you know, what they were, what the problems in the family were. And I checked the mezuzahs. We were all fine. Checked the parashias. One of the parashias didn't come out of the bayis. One of the parashas was stuck in. The parasha of Kadosh Likol B'chol was stuck into the bayis. Somehow when they put it in, it was a little bit too thick. He should have rolled it or whatever. You know, whatever the reasoning was, it didn't come out. So as it came out, finally got it out, it was a snag that the parasha got caught, then it got ripped. So open up the parasha to see if it's still kosher. It's possible. Words ripped through and through. So I'm looking at the parasha. And I see, what are the words that were through and through? And this is how when it was put in, it got torn. This wasn't on the coming out. When it was put in, it got caught in a little piece that was caught and ripped inside. Chol b'chor bonai efta. Okay, these are the words. I still have the parasha. I have the parasha with the rip. Chol b'chor bonai efta. My firstborn I will redeem. These were the words of apostle. Okay, this was the third miscarriage in 5 years of marriage. Okay, he changed his tefillin. Brand new, everything brand new. Nahara is a nice mishpacha, but it's unbelievable. Is it have? What does it have? You know, point is that this is the Torah tells us. It's a mitzvah of mezuzah. Mezuzah has shmiras. And how many times people can come in, check the mezuzah, a person brings it in the morning, check the mezuzahs, father's going in for surgery today, whatever it may be, comes back at night, the mezuzah, one mezuzah is puzzle. Which mezuzah is puzzle? Take out the mezuzah, he says, oh, that's the mezuzah from my dad's room. Okay, we open it up. The guy almost fainted on the spot. Why? Pen yifta levavchem. Okay, the word pen yifta. Carelessness that the sofer or whatever, a smudge, might have been just a little smudge. The hay became smudged, or whatever was elongated, that it touched the top of the hay, and now the hay was connected to the bottom. What is it? A ches. Instead of pen yifta, what does it say? Pen yiftach levavchem. The surgery of that day was open heart surgery. That was the father's news on the door. Okay, there's common stories. Every sofer could tell you stories. They could have good things. I had a friend of mine in Lakewood when I was learning there in yeshiva. So he asked me to check his mezuzahs. Okay, so his wife just had the eighth girl, no boys. And okay, v'shinantam livanecha, the word livanecha was missing from his mezuzahs. So okay, so what should I tell you? But the point is, we're checking it not so much as people think, oh, chas v'shalom, this is a halacha and shulchan aruch, it's brought down. And that's what we encourage people to check, because you should be even properly to do it properly. But there's so many sofers in everything. You know, even in writing a Sefer Torah, you write the Oyesi, the Sefer is copying the words. You know, Bereshis Borei Elikim, Eisa Shemayim V'Eisa Oretz. First Pasuk of the Torah. So the Vilna Gaon says that in the word Bereshis is incorporated all the mitzvahs of the Torah. All Taryag mitzvahs are found in Bereshis. So somebody asked the Vilna Gaon, really, where do you find the mitzvah Pidyon HaBen? Pidyon HaBen, I mean, I myself, I'm a Levi, my mother was a Bas Koyin. I think I experienced my first... Right, you know the family, right? The Bas Koyin, the Koyin, Nochat Koyin, right? Okay, it's a cousin. So we have over here how many Kahana Levi? My first Pidyon HaBen that I ever attended in the family was when I was 23 years old. What's a Pidyon HaBen? Yeah? So anyway, so I asked him, where do you see in the first Pasuk of the Torah Pidyon HaBen? So the Vilna Gaon is the Vilna Gaon, without batting an arm. For a minute, have you heard this already before? You know? Ben Rishon Achash Loishim Yoim Tifta Beis Reish Aleph Shin Yud Tov Ben Rishon Achash Loishim Yoim. Okay, that's the posse. Somebody asked the Chidor, what do you see you have to daven? Daven? What do you have to daven? Everybody has to daven. Who's they? What do you have to daven? Why should... Beis reish alash in your tough. It's bereishis. Bekoil rom avorech shem Hashem tomit. You have to always praise the Baruch Shalom, right? What's the birthday of the world, right? Bereishis bara lekim. The beginning Hashem created heaven and earth. When did that happen? No, when did that happen? When do we celebrate the birthday of the world? Machloikis, when do we... Rosh Hashanah, Hayayim HaRasayim, right? Bereishis, unscramble the letters. Be'alef Tishrei. Right, same words. Yes, Beis Reish Aleph Shin Yud Tov. Be Aleph Tishrei, Bore Elikim, Eis Hashemayim Yeis Haaretz. So Michor Bel Weissmandel says, one second, Reish is Bore Elikim. Ah, so what's the Mitzvah Hayoyim? What's the Mitzvah Hayoyim? So he says, Mitzvah Hayoyim is, we'll count, one second, what do we do in Rosh Hashanah? We want to arouse compassion. So how do we arouse compassion? What's the Shem of compassion? Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei is 26. So Rabbi Chor Ben Weissmandel went to the first shin of the Torah that starts a word. Okay? Starts a word. That, he says, there's a whole soid in the Kabbalah's form and learned them to repeating what he says. That the first time you see an ois in the Torah at the beginning of a word, that's the muhus, the essence of the letter, whatever that means. So fine. He found the first shin at the beginning of the word was Hashamayim, because Bereshis was the middle of the word. So the first shin at the beginning of the word is Hashamayim. Hey is the, hey Ayadiyah, the. Shamayim is Shamayim, that's the first word. So from Shamayim he counted 26 letters. 26 letters from the shin. You can do it, check it out. It's a vav. 26 letters from the vav is a fei. 26 letters in the Fe is a Reish, is Shoifa, by Shoifa Akadmana. How do you arouse compassion on Rosh Hashanah, Be'alef Tishrei, Bita Shoifa? But you see, people say, it's not, we're sitting here, Paparas HaTorah with the Ko, is not, this is the Mechor Ben Weissmandel, so Soidis in every Ois, in every Ois in Torah. You can't put Nekudas in a Sefer Torah, right? It's possible. Possible in a Sefer Torah. The first Ramban al HaTorah tells us that the Nekudas, the Tamin, the Trop, is Torah Shabbal Peh, and Torah Shabbal Peh is like Nitin Likot, you can't write it into a Sefer Torah. You write it into a Sefer Torah, it's possible. A Megillah, a Balkari wants to make little notes in pencil in his Megillah, the Shabura Paschas, it's Mutter, but a Sefer Torah, it's possible. So very often I get a call, the manager of the yearbook, you know, he's the handler, the guy in the class, Rabbi Pinkus, if we get you an extra $1,500, nothing to do with the school. Can you put in the Nekudot, okay? From Bereshis till Sheni, from all the Parashiyot that we learn in the school year, right? Skip the summer because we're not here. Just what we read, the Parashiyot, make it easy for the guy to prepare, right? Put in the Nekudot and the Ta'amim, the Trub. What's the answer? No, puzzle. Right? Now think about it. If I gave you a simple sentence in English, what time do we go to? What's the...
When we get bored.
Okay, tell me when.
No, for hours.
Tell me when. My family's in the mountains. I got nobody home. That's enough. Okay, so we have over here. So we
average
it.
About an hour.
What?
We average about an hour.
Tell me whenever you are. That's it.
Go.
Everybody understand what I said? Simple sentence. Nothing hard. But if we leave out the kudot, right? We leave out the punctuation. Read it again. How many ways can you read that sentence? I didn't say he stole the money. He did. I didn't say he stole the money. I insinuated it. I didn't say he stole the money. He borrowed it long term. I didn't say he stole the money. He took the jewels. I didn't say he stole the money. Of course I did. I did not. So how many ways could you read it? So you see, if you're taking the kudos, you're putting it into the... Yes, we have a Masorah how we read it. Don't try to read it differently, right? That's it. That's the Masorah. But the drush of how we read it, that's the first Ramban. Bereishis bore, bereishis bore. How you take the oasis, how you read it, it's all Torah. It's all there. This is Torah, what it's all about. We cannot put in the kudos and punctuation. The tamim, the trop. Trop is Torah? Yes. We see a very interesting one by Yigash Elov Yehuda in the Vilna Goy. Many know this one. It's very, very popular, right? You know, everybody came home from the Dvar Torah for sale on Friday night for the Shabbos table. Rebbe gave by Yigash Elov Yehuda Kadma VaAzla. Who was the one Kodam VaAzla who went sooner? Muna Revi is the fourth son who is Yehuda. Okay, but where do we see? Okay, the Gemara brings down that's a little more complicated. Okay, we have Vayimoros Chayem Ba'avoyde Kosher, right? Vayimoros Chayem Ba'avoyde Kosher. So who? Rebbeinu and Eibishitz, we said a Shabbos HaGadol L'Rosho, And after you finish the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha, so the, questions anyone, right? Any questions? So one raises his hand, he says, yes, Rebbe, ich verstehe, I don't understand. Vayimorus chayeyam ba'avoyda kosha. Those are such sad words. They embittered their lives. It's such a freilich a trump by Moses Chai. Trumpet blast, such a happy tune. You should line it with Eicha. What are you laying it like? Eicha es olavadi. Line it with Eicha. By Moses Chayem. Everybody started to laugh. Prince and Ivy says, "Freck good." She says, "Yes, by Moses Chayem, right? It should be." But think about it. By Moses Chayem, how long should they have stayed in Mitzrayim? Should have been 400 years. How long did it take for them to go out? The Hanishlam took them out after? Only 210. Because of the intensification of the Sheba, the Tzrayim, and the Tsar, so Kodam, Kadma, the Azla, Kodam, they went sooner, the Ozan, they went out. When? They went out sooner. So that's, I think, the word from the Goyim. Yes, and I was just added, what's the Gematria? Kadma, the Azla, Kuf, Dalet, Mem, Aleph, Vav, Aleph, Zion, Lamet, Aleph, 190. Take away 190 from the 400. How much is left? 210. It's Torah. How many times did you read that pasuk, guys? How many times? Did you know it? No. But see, it's sitting beneath the surface when you wonder. A drush, where is... I know. Until he moved away, we had a no, you know. It's a long time ago. Okay? There you go. We all know Rashi, right? Rashi by Yosef. What did it say by Yosef? Yosef had his dreams, and he comes to Yaakov Avinu. He tells over his dreams. And Yaakov Avinu answers him back very abruptly. Moach Eloim Azeh Asher Cholom Tahavoy Novoy Ani V'Imcha V'Yachecha L'Shtachav Yislecha Arza. So what does Rashi say? How can we know the dreams are not true? Dreams are not true. How do we know? Rochel Mesa, your mother's not here. How can it be that she's going to come by now? So Rashi says he didn't realize what was going on the ship. Okay, but where did Rashi know that? How did Rashi know that that's what he was telling him? Rochel Mesa, Rochel died. Because it's in the Pasuk. It says so in the Torah. What does it say? Okay, let's see the words. Moach Eloim Hazeh, Asher Cholom. What's the last letter of Asher? What's the first two letters of Cholomta? Ches Lamed. What's the last two letters of Cholomta? Mem Tov. What's the first letter of Havoy Nevoy? Hey, so just shift it to the side, and the words, Rochel Mesa, right in the Pasuk, exactly the words you just said. Moach Eloim Hazeh, Asher Cholomta, Havoy Nevoy. But this is what we have to understand. There's so much. When a place that says L'shem Kiddusha Sefer Torah, what is he writing? Oisius in his there's so much that's involved. Every ois, every letter. An aleph. What is an aleph? An aleph is made up of, hope in my mind, I mean, usually sometimes we have our slide presentations with our, you know, video, PowerPoint, but then we go back to the old ancient 80s or whatever. The old chart, they told me there's nothing here, so we just got aleph. What's an aleph? Aleph is number one. Who is one? One is Hashem, right? One is Hashem. Aleph, number one. What's the tzur of the aleph? The aleph is a yud on top, a yud on the bottom, and a vav be'emza. It's a vav. What is the aleph made up to? So we have the aleph is number one. The components of the aleph is a yud. A yud and a vav is 26. What's the gematria of yudke vavke? 26. What's the name aluf mean? Aluf, chief. Master, prince, chief, right? General, right? General. Who's the chief of the world? The Rebbeinu Shlomo. Do you see every ois and aluf, the side and the aluf? So if a person decides, person goes to his local printer, is printing up his invitations for the bar mitzvah, for the wedding, whatever affair. So many choices, Hebrew fonts. Everybody has a computer with Hebrew fonts. So many different ways. Yes? And truthfully, that's very good because you see the last halacha in Hilchos Sefer Torah, which many people are not aware of, is that it's usur to use Ksav Ashurit. The Ksav Ashurit of the Sefer Torah, it's usur to use it for Dvarim Shel Chol. Pischei Tshuva even brings down Loitoiv Masher Roishmin Behanuye Bosa Bosa Kosha Boisiois Mruboi. It's not right. What do you mean Bosa? Square letters shouldn't have it. Reb Moshe Feinstein's Atzah was Machbin, and all his children's invitations for the family was in Rashi Ksav. And that's goof where Rashi Ksav came about. What's Rashi's ksav? A different ksav? Because Rashi wasn't Ikka Torah. Rashi was, as I think, a little chagor on the side. Rashi was a pirish. So that was written in the Rashi ksav, not to differentiate with Oisis and Rubois. Even though the exact printing letters that we have in the Siddur are not exactly in the Sefer Torah, but he held that it was close enough that he went to the other extreme. He didn't paskin that, but that was how the family did it. But anyway, we see the Aleph. Every Oisis Torah. Okay? So we know the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Dalet, Aleph Beis is Aleph Bino. Aleph Bino, learn Torah. Gimel Dalet, Gimel Dalet. So the Gemara asks, why is the foot of the Gimel uplifted to the Dalet? Okay, why is the foot of the Gimel uplifted to the Dalet? It's because, very interesting, you know, we gave very often, we've given many of these, Yangizul National Council, Torah Masorah, they've given courses for Rabbonim, rabbinic training. So one of the rabbinic training courses they had, and fundraising, and this part, that part, all different aspects of Rabbonis, and one of them was practical safras for Rabbonis. So I was called to give practical safras for Rabbonis. So what do you teach in about 40 minutes? How do you give a crash course in safras for Rabbonim? So I just basically felt that a lot of the experiences I've had, embarrassing situations where I felt bad for the Rav, I figured I would just point a few of those things out. One of them was about the color of the cloth. You just saw about the spots on the back of the cow. This is natural. This is the hair follicles, guys. This is not dirty cloth. This is not irregular. This is the hair follicles. So when a rabbi's coming in, one mezuzah after the nuts, it's dirty. You know, it's important for him to know that that's what cloth is. It's not. But one part that once was very, very upsetting. Person came in. He had a very, very wealthy, successful Walabas who wanted the nicest for his home, and he brought the Rav to choose. Rabbi, pick me the nicest. I'll take the nicest one. You tell me it's... And gave him the nicest mezuzah we had. One after the other. Puts them down. One after the other, he puts it down. One after the other, puts it down. Excuse me, Rabbi. What are you looking for? I don't understand. Like, what would you like nicer? Tell me, Alpha. You know, what am I looking that I should do? What am I doing wrong? He says, no. Nothing you did wrong. I just can't understand this cipher. Every letter is so perfect. He just can't get the gimel straight. Every gimel is flying in the air. Every gimel is flying in the air. The Gemara Shabbos. Gemara Shabbos. My time, Akara, the gimel klapi dalid. Why is the gimel uplifted, walking towards the dalid? See the gimel? See the dalid? Okay, it looks like a shoe, a high heel, taking a walk, right? See the gimel walking to the dalid. Have it upside down? Okay, please, upside down, please tell me, right? Have the gimel on the dalid. In fact, the Gemara, why is the Gimel uplifted to the Dalit? Shekach Dalit is assistant, not to wait to be approached. Our Mahalach HaChayim has to be, where can I be of assistance? Whether it's giving money or giving assistance or being Mevaka Choylo or whether it's saving a life or it's just helping a person carry the packages. We tell the kids, going out to the car and bringing in a bag, right? That's going with HaSalim. That you have the Lord's Acha HaDal. So the Gemara says, Ibazoi, very good. So now we know why the Gimel is uplifted to the Dalit. But the Dalit is Gimel, is Gemoyel. Dalit is the Dalit. Shekach Darke Shal Goyim Lechasod and Lord's Acha HaDal. Oyze Dalim. The unfortunate one is the Dalit. But the Gemara, why is the Dalit have his back to the Gimel? And the Gemara says, if you want to some things, just for lack of time, we'll just go quickly. Why is the Dalit have his back to the Gimel? What the Gemara seems to be asking is, first of all, we're analyzing the Tzura of the Dalit. We all know that's a Dalit. The Gemara is asking, why? If he is recipient, why shouldn't his face be turning the gimel and saying thank you? Isn't that the proper derech to show hakaras hatov? So what does the Gemara answer? The Gemara answers, no. Because he's running behind, that his back is turned, because the highest level of tzedakah is matan besesa. That's not to embarrass the person. He's giving it while his back is turned. Right? So you have a very interesting example, which you always tell over. The person was doing very well, big philanthropist, always gave. And unfortunately, things changed, and it was a turn, and he himself was not able to give anymore. Somebody heard about it, and he was trying very hard to cover up, to recoup, and to get himself back at the swing of things. Most people, there's always 1 yen, and he's turning red, he's turning green, he's purple. Don't worry, Harry, he said, I just happen to have an extra 20 grand. Cash, take it, okay, you can have it, you could use it. Oh, I would never believe it, I'd be able to give you a donation. So he always said, is this tzedakah or not tzedakah? The guy's taking $20,000 cash, giving it to him. Take it. Keep it. Wow, it's a big gift, right? Harry is gone. He's out the door, embarrassed. He's turning purple. That's it. He took a knife and stuck it inside a dagger, would be worse. That's not. But on the other hand, if he tapped him on the shoulder and he took him outside And he said, listen, I heard things are not so good. You know, the economy is really bad and people are suffering. But just in case you need, I have an extra 20 grand. You can borrow it, take it, hold it. That's what Gemara tells us. Gemilas Chasad, and taking it and giving a person an opportunity to be able to repay, to keep his self-respect. Like the Gemara said, who do we lend money to, right? They only lend to wealthy people, you know, because always afraid the poor person can't pay it back. So they're giving it to people. They trust him. He's giving it back. But he's able to pay it back on his own. Nobody knows about it. That's Chesed. But who would ever think two Oisiyas, a Gimel and a Dalet, a Gimel and a Dalet, two simple letters, the shape of the Ois, his Torah, that the Kach Darkei Shol Gimli Chasod, Loretz Acha Hadal, that if the Gimel is not uplifted, that is not Mehuda. So here this person is looking at every mezuzah, because he forgot the Gemara. So it's an important Gemara to know, but to know that in the Oisiyas itself, every Ois has Ois. People come in checking, oh, make sure the Lama didn't have a big tag on the Lama. Why? Because they went to the Mekubal, and the Mekubal told them that the top tag on the Lama is tag of Chesed, and if it's missing that, that's the cause of all your problems in your life. So every woman comes in checking how much knows about the tag on the Lama. That's it. That's how, unfortunately, it all becomes popular. But you see, with B'nai Torah, we learn how many of us ever learned Lamed Vav? I mean, I myself learned it because I'm a Sofer. I had to learn it, right? I needed it for the course. Otherwise, that's I'm out of business. But Lamed Vav is a Tzuris HaOisiyas. Just to understand the Tzuris, not to check on mezuzah to know, but to know what we're looking at, what the Ois is supposed to look like. How, first reaction I get, people come in, look at the, well, I'm not going to know anything. Well, what do you mean you're not going to know anything? I'm going to show you, what is mehudah? Why is one mezuzah $42? And why is one mezuzah $150? Is that a ripoff? No, it's not a ripoff. Because if you sit down and analyze and look at the letters of the $42 mezuzah, and you look at the letters of the 150, every letter is picture perfect. Every halacha in Shulchan Aruch, every hiddur is in that letter. It's all there. There are 42, you can read it very well, but it's not the same hiddur. Is it kosher? Yes, it's kosher. Hiddur mitzvah is up to every individual. Because from 42 to 150, there are so many different levels. There's 50s, and there's 60s, and there's 70s, and the 80s, and the 90s. There's so many, and every person has to do the fee what he's able to do. But for us to understand that it's not all the same. There's different hidurim, there's different levels, there's different kedusha involved, the person who wrote it, what wrote it, how did it go. Unfortunately today, safras, what do we know, halachas, the biggest halachas is when it's written up. I mean today, okay, yeshiva world learned about the ritzuas, and this one learned about that, and then you have a whole big ed in the atem, and then you have a whole big thing in mishpacha, and then you get interviews, every magazine, and mom is famous, it gets be in every paper, all calling up for interviews about the halacha. That's how we learn halacha today, unfortunately. But it makes a tumult, and you know what, on one hand, it's yerida l'tzarech aliyah, because the tumults get out, and people become aware, and you are consumers, and now you're demanding, even though you're demanding for the reason you were made aware of this is through the sources of the media, but now, Baruch Hashem, every manufacturer who is producing in Eretz Yisrael is producing with the greatest hidurim and the biggest hechsherim. So it's a wonderful thing in ways. But you see, the point is for us to know, what is it? How much should I spend on a mezuzah? How much should I spend on a pair of tefillin? It's a question people always ask me. I asked Shmuel Orbach, Zayin Gazutenstein, Neretz Yisrael. So I said, Vos Zogach Samensh, speak Yiddish, explain in English. Vos Zogach Samensh, what do I tell a person? He wants to know what's the most mehudadik tefillin. So Vos Zogach, what do I tell him? Do I tell him the most expensive tefillin? Is that what I tell him? The most expensive? So he looked at me, he smiled, just tell him, Vos mehr megit for mitzvah's tefillin, the more you spend for mitzvah's tefillin, das geht sich herein and hit the mitzvah, goes into the hidden mitzvah, yes. I said, Rebbe, Rosh Hashiva can zogin, you can tell a person that. Great, I'm the soicha, yeah, the more you spend on it and the more you put into it, oh, it's great, it's the Amish hidden the mitzvah, come on. That's not the way you sell it. But on the other hand, the halach is avodas yad necessary? Is it something which the halacha is important? And there's machloikas and there are poiskim and each poisik is different in yonu. But it's not to make it hard. It's just to understand what we're doing because, you see, the way I explain here the mitzvah, very often you have individuals that are not from and understanding here. Rabbi, what is it? Come on, a $42, a $50, what are you trying to just rip me off, take my money? What? I said, here the mitzvah is a very simple example. I'll give you a little example. Okay, a father had three sons and it was father's birthday. And the children were making a party. And three sons decided to buy dad a gift, each one individually on his own, not chipping in. Each one is buying his own separate gift. Now, of the three sons, the two older ones are very wealthy. One was very generous. One was very stingy, still had the first dollar he ever made. And the third one ever was the brother that they he just didn't do well. They held him out. They gave him a job, and they he was plugging along. All three brothers, same father. They all buy a gift. So the wealthy, generous son walks in. I need a gift for my dad. He says, what would you like? He said, well, he's no object. Just show me something nice. He says, what? So he takes a silver wine bottle with a becher with matching little cups and everything, rings up a bill. Whatever it is, $1,000. Said, Dad, dear Dad, happy birthday. Love you. Right. Second son walks in. Now, he's more practical. He says, you know, he's not cheap. He's just practical. He's very economical. He says, you know, my father's in the old country. He doesn't really care about these things. It's not important to him. This, that, it's the thought that counts. So he says, well, how much is the thought that you want to count? Like, how much did I spend for that thought? He said, okay, $100 for $100. He says, I have a beautiful $100. We'll emboss the name. Included in the price, initials on the corner. Great. Okay, wrap it up. Wraps it up, dear dad. The third son walks in. Walks in a little shoebox. Okay, this shoebox was his push goods, piggy bag. He's been putting away, he knows about this party already for months in advance. He's been putting away his pennies, his nickels, and his dimes, and he's saving up to buy dad a gift. But this is what it is. That's the Matthias. I had a woman who came in to buy tefillin that way for her grandson. We took a picture of it, the little bills on the side. You see the sincerity of it. Like you see, you cry, but you see the sincerity. And this is what he did. He walks in with his pin pad. So the guy behind the counter is waiting for it to finish counting. He comes out, $92.33. Okay. So he says, what can I get? He says, you know what? I have a wallet. It's really a good seller. A very wealthy guy just bought it a few minutes ago, not knowing the brothers, whatever it's for. He says, I have a beautiful wallet. I'll even include the initials, emboss it for you, and you'll have your gift. I'll give it to you discounted, whatever you give me, just keep $90, keep the chain. Wraps it up. The father opens up the three gifts. Three gifts sitting on the table. He opens up the first one, he says, wow. It wasn't necessary, he didn't have to, but it feels good. Look, he went out and he bought it. He opens up the second gift, that wallet, and he gets so angry. He says, not the gift, he says, he's crank. There's something wrong. When is he going to grow up? What's with this kid? Who do you think he's trying to fool? What is this? They're just so angry, so upset. He opens the third gift, the identical wallet that just a moment ago got him so upset, he starts to cry. My son took the food from his mouth of his wife and his children, and he bought me this gift. And that could be sometimes the most beloved gift of all. Hidden mitzvah. What is hidden mitzvah? I don't know anybody's bank accounts. I'm not here to tell a person how much to spend, right? And nobody could tell a person that. But every person knows what the Rabbanu Shalom gives him, and he knows exactly where he's standing. He knows what he's able to do, what he's able to afford. And with his sincerity, yes, it could be that shoebox counting out the pennies, but to him, that is it. And yes, it's a $42 mezuzah, which is not the most mehuda. But because to him, that's the best, and his sincerity is able to do it, clap is the Rabbanu Shalom. That is the mitzvah. That's the most beautiful mitzvah. But on the other hand, you can have a person who takes the most precious and the money and throat, but his libay chosabay, he's not thinking about it, just to show off to his friends. They always used to say, you know, they say from the Kotzker, that if he would eat the moron charoisus and shul, and hold the lulav and estrig at home, both mitzvahs would look different. As you know, take the lulav and shul, estrig and shul, everybody sees it. Oh, look, hey, Yaakov, what's in my head? Coming up. Can I shake yours? Everybody's going to see that? Modern Haraj, what's the shear? You know, you get the charts. Was I yoitz? Is it enough? I need more? No, it's a brand, you know. I always define it, if I would be able to sell mezuzahs laminated. Okay, the halach is you roll them, you put them into the case, and you put them on the door. Nobody sees, kiss them. It's the case, why? You see that big case that's inside? I know, I had this once. We had a big mezuzah, this big, okay? It was a $683 mezuzah, right? With silver and everything came out, okay? And the guy took it, was all thing for a moisit. And he took a small mezuzah, stuck it, scotch taped it in the middle somewhere. I said, I have a big one for you. Now, how much is the big one? Ah, $500 and a big mezuzah. No, it's big. Nobody sees. The last two, we'd have to put in the big one, but here not. But the point is, nobody sees. Yes, somebody sees. But you see, if we know that we're doing the best we possibly can, and we're concerned, and we learn the halachas, okay? And learning the halachas is important to know what the halachas is. You're buying a pair of tefillin. What's the research? Not just put it on. Yes, anybody can go online. We sell online. Our people will buy online. But the point is that there's ways of buying, and there's ways of understanding, and there's ways of giving your son, if it's a pair of tefillin for your son, or even for yourself, What does it mean? What goes into it? What does it entail? Who wrote it? How much preparation? L'shem kedusha sefer Torah. L'shem just fill in. Anybody here know how long it takes to make a pair of batim? I'm not going to test you. Don't know. How long does it take to make a pair of batim? Pair of batim gasses, okay? From the beginning, okay? From the piece of earth. By the way, this is leather, okay? It's earth. But it's not the same part of the body as the cloth. The cloth comes around the sides of the body. This comes from the cheek and the neck, right? You know, the bilkalach over here, the cheeks, you pinch the person's, right? You know, bekalach, you have over there, that's the piece. That's the thick piece, okay? The piece of neck and cheek of the big cow is as big as the whole calf. That's how big it is. From that, you get a tooth. You're taking a piece of ore. It's thick. You take it. From this, you mold it and shape it. It takes about a year and a half to 2 years to make a pair of batim. You know that? What is he doing?
Why?
Because it dries and has to dry properly. And do you know the halachas in between?
So you put it in a vacuum or do
that
it
in itself, just to come down, you're all welcome to come. You come down, we'll show you how you make a pair of tefillin. It's fascinating because you don't understand. What does it mean, prudos, that the batim is separated and there are no holes? I have here samples and samples. Why? Because there are holes. The little pinched holes. Now, I can put that into water. I can soften it. I can take crazy glue, pinch it shut, sand it smooth, and you would never, ever know there was a hole. The batim ach could do that well, too, as well. But you need an erelich yid who understands that the halach, that makes it possible. If it's possible, you can't use it. Right? The whole thing with suis now, and people are peeling the suis on the side. What does that mean? How does it mean? So very often, these things can happen because sometimes it's a mismatch in the whole thing and how the vat is made. I think it might be just to give you a little bit of an idea. Okay, how ritsu is made. Okay, you take a big cow. Okay, first thing is we look for a black cow, right? That's when you need a black cow. Ritsu has to be black. Take a piece of hide. Big hide from a big cow. Okay, if you come to the store, you couldn't fit it in the bag, but it's like the shape of a cow. Full size cow. You take it, turn it into leather. Okay, it looks like leather, seat cover, same idea, same as a seat cover, piece of leather. Leather wallet, right? Remember the leather wallet with the embossed initial, right? Leather, all made properly. L'shem kedushas tefillin from the beginning. Okay, this is an or avodas yad that's put in. It has to be made biyad. It has to be made properly. If a goy is involved in the ibud, it could passel it. But these are all stages of how it's made till you get to this point of leather. Then there's the painting process. Okay, painting. If anybody knows anything about construction, any renovations, and you know you put up new sheetrock, we all know. Before you paint, you have to prime. If you don't prime, you'll be painting forever, right? This paint sops. The prime seals the pores, whatever it may be, whatever it does to treat that piece of sheetrock, then you can paint on top of that and the less. When you're painting leather, okay, the leather, first of all, is halacha l'moshe mi-sinai. That ritsuos have to be black. Batim, it doesn't say that. People think batim. The batim is a kal v'chomer from ritsuos. The halacha l'moshe mi-sinai of black is by ritsuos, not by the batim. Some sheet this whole batim can be white. So you see people touching up their batim, be concerned with ritsuos, not so much the batim, because the batim are probably fine. But the halacha, also from minamut b'ficho, but it has to be black. So now that black processing is, before you paint this, okay, this is very porous, leather is very porous, has little holes, little pores, breathe, you have to put on also a type of a primer, okay, in the Ritzuish Sprach, it's called Pragmatia. You take that to the Pragmatia stage where you put on the Pragmatia. So there are many ways. Over the years, they made the Pragmatia. The Pragmatia itself is black too, because that's the first coating. But that coating is made more of a sealant. And then on top of that, you put the additional coats. And the shine that you see here afterwards is put through a heat sealing machine. With a heat sealing machine, well, it works with heat. It like bakes it on, so to say. And now it's on the Ritzua, and it has the shine, and that's Ritzuish. Now, how do you cut the ritsua so perfectly if you have, you know, before the days of black on black where the sides are so nice and clean? Because it's painted before it's cut. Okay, now if you ever measured ritsua shalyad, how long is ritsua shalyad? So ask any soifer and you know. The shalyad is 4 meter, and the shalosh is 3 meter. Ask anybody here, what's a meter, right? A meter is about 39 inches. Let's work with yards. 36 inches, we're familiar with yards. So let's say now 4 yards and 3 yards. 4 yards, your shalyad, it's 4 yards, okay? I don't see anybody's tefillin here. I tell you, tomorrow you want to check it out. Walk from one end of the room with your ritsua Make sure nobody else in the base matters. I mean, otherwise, though, especially if you have kids in Shidduchim here. From one end of the room to the other end of the room, it's 12 feet. That's how long it stretches out. Believe it or not, the 4 meter of putting it around the arm. And if you have a shin on top, it's noch mehr, it's 5 meter, right? So that's how did he get such a long ritzua? It was a short cap. The cap was not 12 feet long. So if you look over here, if anybody knows the old apple peeling trick, you know, the old carnivals used to have the apple peeling contest. We have to peel the apple around and around and around in one piece without ripping, and the one who finished the longest peel won. Funny why your tzu is always twisting and turning and never staying straight until finally you get there. If you wear a gartel, put it through the belt, it's a different situation. Otherwise, it's to the middle, but then it will never straighten out. So this is the core. We leave this core in the center. This is about as much as left over. This is the core of the center of the tzua. Everything was cut until this point, so it still has an arch, and it's able to be working with it. But they're always looking to come up with a better way. How do you improvise? Like, where the black on black come from? First of all, it's a sheet that's a Rambam. We don't paskin like the Rambam. If we don't paskin like that, there's no reason to have black on black ritzuis. One sheet, you want it, but we don't paskin that way, right? Only thing is that when you take black on black ritzuis, what happens there is they soak it. They take the R, and they don't paint it. They soak it literally in a vat of black dye. The shame, kedushas tefillin, and now it's black through and through. So even if you cut the ritzua, it's still black because the insides are black. So now it's very practical. I paint my ritzuas, they rub out. The guy next to me is sitting with his marker every day looking for the dots and touching it up, and I have no problem. Maintenance free, because now even the undercoating is black. So if the top rubbed off, it's not shiny, but it's still black, it's still bikasha. But you see, in the process of the white ritzuas, because when you have the black, that's not the problem. Now with this whole issue coming out, they found that the ritzuis, what were coming out, this happened a couple of years ago, and now again they rediscovered an issue, where the ritzuis, the black, started peeling off. Sorry, I had one other thing, I just thought I put it in, but I left it behind. Okay, so what happened is, if you peeled it, it looked like black electrical tape. Okay, literally, peeled it off, the ritzua is as white as this side, underneath, and the whole piece of paint just came peeling off like electrical tape. Who's the scoundrel who did this, right? So a couple of years ago it happened, yes? But here in America they started, and then there was articles in the Five Towns News, and then it came on to Yeshiva World, and then it spread on to Matzev, and then it went to, well, even Vassas Nias put something in it, right? Wow. And they're tumbling, and then the English stations, the Gaiish stations knew about the scam. What happened? The guy in Arizona who made the ritzuis 3 months before this whole thing hit America, he already put a recall in the paper. The Hagemach Ritzuas, I tried a new pragmatia, everything was fine, and then with time it started to peel, so he already put in the recall, asking anybody who has this problem and issue, please bring it back, I'll give you new ones, right? He did nothing wrong. Okay, not saying all, but there's a lot of them that they were picking, and every result, so you have to be very careful right away, you know, jumping up. It's not always the way it seems. But on the other hand, now they're coming out with somebody who, this taka was a guy. In fact, I met this person individually, he brought us Ritzuas, and they were very inexpensive. Couldn't understand. You know, sometimes the chesaron is, if it's too good to be true, it ain't true. I had that once before. I bought mezuzahs from somebody. I knew the mezuzahs that I was buying from a seichin and a show when I first started out, and I was like young and getting into it. So a guy comes with mezuzahs that I knew very well. This seichin, and he sell it to me for practically $20 cheaper on a mezuzah. And that wasn't in those days. It was not a $10 cheap on a mezuzah. I said, wow, that guy's such a kind of. I got him $10 cheaper, so I ran a sale. I was selling him cheaper to Cypher. It's just a wholesale at a different Cypher. I got a call one night. Hashi, where did you get those mezuzahs? I said, like, well, I'm going to tell you my sources. What do you think? This is on my business now. I'm going to give you. He said, okay. He said, it was a Geneva, a guy in Square Town, lived in Square Town. He was Muncie by the Square Town bus. A guy used to wait for the bus to go to Square Town and the other way back. He used to give him the key to his place to use it when he came home, if he needed the restroom or if he needed to wash up. Fine, that's it. He trusted the guy. All of a sudden, one night, this guy, he sees that mezuzah's missing and that this Megillah's missing. Guess what? He used to pilfer the mezuzah's, put together a pack. And he saw the pinkest, okay. He bought it. I bought it. I ended up meeting the person who was stolen from. Today we're best of friends. That's how we became friendly, because listen, I gave everything. Luckily I'd given checks, I was to stop the check. But I learned a long time ago, when it's too good to be true, another hashgacha, so things were suspicious, so we stopped. We didn't really wasn't interested in dealing with it. You know, not everything is the dollar or the thing. If you're not satisfied with it, listen, I take an uprise to sell what I'm selling. People trust me. I have to know that it's 1,000%. So we try our best. Listen, not always the person is able to help you. You should always be able not to be nichshol. But the point was, is that he was selling a lot of ritzuis inexpensively and hashkochas. And some of the hashkochas, we say, were forged, not really written by the... Some would say it was ritzuis, they were pasted on, literally, that you peel off this paint now, it is literally so strong you can't rip it. Like a plasticized thing, like the whole thing. In fact, not that he made it, and because of the pragmatia and the heat sealing, the interreaction was not proper, and it was a bad batch. This was made l'chatchila that way. So that seems to be what it was. So just anybody who does see anything suspicious about your ritzuis, listen, you did the best you could. The person who sold it to you did the best he could. He saw hashgachas. Mm-hmm. Not always is it something that we're able to detect immediately. Nobody's looking to fool anybody. But if somebody does notice that the ritzuis are peeling, meaning peeling coming off in pieces, sometimes because of the oils and the hair and the perspiration, it starts to peel at the edges, or it just, you know, starts to bubble up. Listen, the havdil in a house, you know, after a couple of years, you know, needs a paint job, these things happen. That's the normal wear and tear of a pair of ritzuis. Especially people have different oils in the hair, and perspiration reacts differently to the painting. I've had individuals that had allergic reactions to certain paints. Just, you see on their hand the rash, exactly where the ritzuis were. So there's a lot of different things that people react differently, how the wear and tear. But in this particular case, where you see that it's peeling, and it's actually coming off of it, that's something to be concerned about, to go to have it checked out, either to go back to where you got it from the source, or if anything, unfortunately, to have to replace it, but make sure they're being done properly. So I think that's pretty much it. That's a few little interesting subjects. I mean, I have a whole bag of tricks here of how to bottom a maze, but I figure, listen, guys, you know, enough to talk about without setting up a table, taking away place for the food. So
come again.
See, black on black with ritzuis, again, there are many places. I personally asked Reb David Feinstein when it first started. I want to know, Dam Alahosh. People ask me, so what? I'm going to tell you what I think. Who am I to tell you what I think? If it's not more expensive, then why not? If it's more expensive, it's not necessary. Okay, that's it. That was his words. But on the other hand, he said, no reason not. Those previous ones didn't. He said, maybe they couldn't make it. Other Rabbanim, other Rosh Yeshiva felt that there's a Messiah. They didn't want to change from the Messiah because they're looking to do it. They say, Elmer for the Zatzal, that the one who made ritzuis wanted to give him a matana, the black on black, so he didn't accept them. But he told people they're not accepting it because it's not ois kehalten. It's not a problem. Because people wanted to say, it's a chatzitza, it's not a chatzitza because it's just chazusa ba'alma. It's just, it's the ritzu itself. And now on the undercoating, you don't have anything other than the actual leather, which happens to be black, because it was soaked through and through. So he said the reason is because I don't want people who might see lahas to say that this is the ritzuis and the others are not good. So you have to really go with the Masara. There are people that come in and have their Masara, that this is the way I went, this is the way I did it, they do not want to change. And others that feel because of this maintenance-free aspect that it's kedah. Listen, you have black ritzuis, they are beautiful and black and very dark, and it does last. One thing is, you know, I always had a din Torah because we sold black on, when they first came out, I sold black on black ritzuis to a chassan. And about 2 weeks after Sherev Brachos, he came in, wanted to take us to a din Torah because he says dye from the black on black onto all his new shirts, and he had to replace his brand new shirts for the chasana. All of them have black stains on the collars. So don't ask. That was another interesting situation in the life of Safers. But okay, in the end, they perfected it. Baruch Hashem, was a problem. Listen, it was a problem. I had my own. I said, 1 second, why? I just put on a new shirt this morning. Why does it look so? That's a lot of it. But because of that, and trying to perfect it, and trying to make it better, they try new ingredients, which again, nothing is done, but sometimes it's a gelungen, and sometimes it's not. That's basically it. Listen, like a chef, you know, you try a recipe, sometimes it's a hit, and sometimes it's a, listen, you know, you got a tofu-y moment, you never know, like that's it, right? Yeah. Okay. Any questions? Everybody's welcome to come by anytime to take a look and see how badly a factory on premises, how they see the presses, see the bars, see how it's done.